Welcome to All the Therapies.
We're two clinicians who try out different therapeutic practices
so you can find the right type of healing for you.
I'm Abby Crum.
I'm Mona E. Shaker.
And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
Thanks for joining us. Let's jump in now.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, Abby. Hi, Mona.
Hello. So happy to have you.
Yeah, we're excited to talk today. So this is Cassandra Moore. She's a licensed MFT. She loves working with children, adolescents, and families to strengthen the parent-child bond and help kids and teens suffering from anxiety and mood disorders. So yeah, we were talking about this. You cover the gamut, like from really young to adults, you know, like not a lot of therapists do that. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I really started off though with kids and adolescents. And once you can kind of not master, because it's an evolving process, right? You never master, but it makes working with adults a little bit easier, actually, I find. So,
yeah. Well, we did our REBT session and it was really helpful. And it's interesting because one of the takeaways I had was this, like, you use the term fruits of your labor, like, I don't get to enjoy the fruits of my labor. And that theme kept coming up. Like, I just felt since that session, like that kept coming up. So that was really helpful. That stayed with me. But why don't you tell us just about who you are, what you do? Just you tell us a little bit.
Yeah, my name, well, you guys already know my name. We actually go way back. So I'm a licensed therapist. I work in Newport Beach in Southern California at a place called the Cognitive Behavioral Institute of Southern California. I know it's a mouthful. What I do there is I really started off when I started working there, working primarily with young children from like 2 to 8 years old and working really on that parent-child bond and strengthening the parent-child bond through a form of therapy called parent-child interaction therapy. And then I've evolved to working with adolescents through the cognitive behavioral lens. And I just fell in love with both working with the young kids as well as the adolescents, and specifically working from a cognitive behavioral perspective. And so that's kind of me in a nutshell. I've been doing it for about 10 years, a little bit over, and I just really love the work. And I love the kids and the teens and what they've taught me through the years. I feel like they keep me hip a little bit.
Yes, totally.
That's so much about Roblox at this point. So
wait, about what?
Roblox and Minecraft. Roblox. Yeah.
You know what I know about Roblox is because somebody stole my credit card and charged a bunch on Roblox. Is like a gaming system. Yep. And so this guy that I had to talk to at the bank was like not convinced that, like, he's like, but do you have a child that has access to your credit card? And I'm like, no. And they're like, maybe your husband is. I was like, no, like nobody. It's not using Roblox. Okay.
That's so funny you say that, Abby, because sometimes when I'm working with kids, we'll talk about like incentives, right? Just to make the work more fun and have them like want to, you know, do some of the tougher stuff. And so I always ask, what would be worth earning? Robux, I guess that's the version. That's like the money in Roblox. So yeah, it's really popular.
Yeah.
I even had to download it. So
right. Just to be like, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. The bucks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. I mean, that's why you're here. You are like the cognitive behavioral queen and you have so much experience working with children. And you said this earlier, so we're just going to like say it out. Like, we've been friends since high school as well. I've known you since middle school, Rancho San Joaquin. And I think you went to grad school first for psychology. I think I was second. And I think Abby was the... Well, Abby was doing the comedy career.
Yes.
Seeing where that.
We've known each other for a decade. Well, way more than that. 2 decades.
Yeah.
Wow. Like 20 years.
It's weird when you say it out loud like that.
I know. And it's also interesting to think that we all kind of got into the fields. It's also really nice to.
Yeah. What does that say about Rancho and uni? You know,
like, Irvine.
Irvine.
Yeah, Irvine.
Pathology.
Right. Yeah.
Every corner. So yeah, so you're a therapist and you utilize REBT, and that's what Abby did a session with you. So what does REBT stand for? How does it actually work?
Absolutely. Yeah. I know there's a lot of these like acronyms and terms in the field of psychology, and just to kind of explain, because you might have heard me talking about cognitive behavioral therapy, REBT is a form of cognitive behavioral therapy. And depending on who you're talking to, you're probably going to get mixed like what came first, REBT or CBT. And if you look at the numbers, I mean, in 1955, Albert Ellis, as a psychologist, developed what's called REBT, which stands for Rational Emotive Behavior Therapy. And in the 60s, Aaron Beck, which is a psychologist as well, developed CBT. So REBT is a form of it. It's a very pioneering form of cognitive behavioral work. And it really emphasizes that we all experience emotional disturbance, right? Like we are human, we're prone to suffering. But our suffering in large part is a result of ways in which we look at things. So our thinking can really cause a lot of emotional behavioral suffering and self-sabotaging behaviors. And so REBT really emphasizes overcoming adversity and achieving your goals through looking at your problems, way that you're looking at the world as well as yourself, and finding ways to move from thinking in absolutists or demands and really rigid ways to more flexible ways that allow for you to experience healthy negative emotions rather than unhealthy ones that lead to a lot of these really worsening of the suffering. So it is a very short-term treatment. It's very action-packed. It's directive and it works. Like it's worked in my life. And so I love to share it with others.
Yeah. Cause I really feel like the things that, right, I've found effective for me, it's like what I like to share with other people. But I'm curious because I had kind of a like, I think I remember REBT and I do remember it being a precursor to CBT. Like it was like in my grad program, it was like a footnote, you know? So I was kind of wondering like, how did you come to learn about it, experience it, and what drew you to it?
Yeah, great question. You're right. It is such a footnote. I didn't learn about it really in school, to be honest, but I did have a professor, I believe. No. Maybe it was like, as I was applying to grad school, I was like, I'm going to read every self-help book known to man. And so I went to the, you know, used bookstore and I grabbed everything under the sun, you know, like psychoanalytic stuff, humanistic, a lot of Jung, you know, Man's Search for Meaning, all these like super therapy, big books. And I grabbed this tiny one that said Rational Emotive Behavior Therapy. And it was like ripped up and everything. And I'm like, well, I'll read it. I'll give it a try, you know? And then, so I remember like literally I was at my pool in my neighborhood, like reading this book before starting grad school and thinking, this is me. Like, this is how I think. This is like just resonates with my view of the world and what has worked for me when I've gone through stuff. And so I read through it, loved the book. It was very philosophical. Philosophers like Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius and all these like interesting philosophers. And so I just fell in love with it. And then you guys, it's like serendipitous. I don't know how much time we have, but like, if I can tell the story, I started school and then you have your, you know, class where you have to sign up for your practicum, right? Yeah. And so they had two sessions, info sessions for this introduction to practicum, and they were going to place you in your practicum, which
a
for
practicum
everybody.
Practicum is like a placement where you go to like, yeah, actually start to practice therapy.
Exactly. So it's like your training ground in an actual place, a facility or a clinic. And so I signed up for the first one and then they emailed me, sorry, there's not enough spots for you. You have to go to the second one. And I was devastated because I was like, I'm ready. I want to jump into therapy. And I thought I'm never going to go to practicum. Like all my rational thinking popped up. And then I go to this next meeting. Great. They give me an interview at this place called Western Youth Services, working with children and adolescents. And the person interviewing me happened to be a supervisor in rational emotive behavior therapy. Wow. And like through the Albert Ellis Institute, which is a big, you know, hub of training people in REBT. And so I was like, wow, okay, I read this book. Now I'm sitting in front of like a real expert on it. It's just meant to be. So that's kind of the long story.
I love that. Nice. I know. I feel like that stuff definitely happens for a reason.
Yeah.
But in those moments of distress, it's like, what's the meaning? What's the point? I should have been this other way. So I'm glad you were able to go with the flow in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's turned into like a lifelong relationship with, you know, and I work with this person currently. So.
Oh, cool. Okay. Nice. You also utilize CBT and something called CBIT. So I'm curious, how are they related to each other or how are they different?
Good question. I mean, I'll explain that. So rational emotive behavior therapy really looks at, like, I love this quote by the developer of it, Albert Ellis. He says, there's three musts in the world that disturb us. Like, I must do well, people must treat me well, and the world must be easy. And so REBT really looks at moving from musts, right? Like, I must do well all the time, to preferences. Strong wishes and desires to do well. And by doing that, like, we're able to then not feel unhealthy negative emotions or extreme emotional reactions when, say, we don't do well, because we will likely not do well at times, right? So it really helps you build resilience, right? Because you're letting go of some of what you can't control and allowing yourself to still feel the negative emotions, but not be disturbed by them. REBT really looks at that level of thinking, where we're looking at kind of what underlies your way of interpreting the world and addresses that really core level. Whereas in CBT, we address a lot of what are called like automatic thoughts, thoughts that come into your mind just very, you know, automatically. Say you have a meeting and you show up late to the meeting and you're thinking like, oh my gosh, I'm so late. They're going to think like I'm so unprofessional, right? And CBT might help you to look at, okay, that's mind reading, because you don't know what they're thinking, right? We're addressing these like misinterpretations potentially that lead to a lot of anxiety or any emotion. Whereas REBT is going to look underneath that and really be like, okay, well, what's the demand that you have of yourself? I must never be late. If I'm late, then it's awful. So it also looks at awfulizing as well. And so it kind of goes like a step lower, you know, like more at the philosophical level of what we expect of ourselves and others. So it's like a short, very, you know, quick explanation of it. I think another thing is that REBT really looks at and believes very, very strongly in what's called unconditional self-acceptance and others' acceptance. And so that means that no matter what, right, even if I behave poorly, act in opposite of my values, I am still a acceptable person, right? Mm-hmm. I'm still a lovable person. And so part of the work is really emphasizing this belief that you are unconditionally acceptable and removing self-rating. Whereas in CBT, a lot of times we might really focus on positive traits and like try to build up what you're good at, which is great too. And they're very complement each other in that way. But REBT really looks for what's called the elegant solution, which is like, I, no matter what, even if I suck like at something, I'm good, you know? Whereas, you know, CBT might not always go to that level.
Well, and I love that being like the baseline is just like, I'm good no matter what. Cause like ultimately, like, and there's just some like relief in that. And I definitely like, now that you're saying it, just thinking back on my session, yeah, I think that was what most helpful is kind of looking at the demand I was placing on myself. You know, we were talking about social media and that's in the episode before this, but I think that was really helpful versus just like, what are my faulty thoughts? And again, I'm familiar with CBT and like kind of know, but I think I did feel like the REBT intervention was helpful.
Yeah, Abby, I love that you said that, because it's like we could go back and forth all day about your perception of whether I should post stuff or not, right? But like, okay, let's say you don't post stuff. Are you not good enough, you know, as a therapist? And so I love that. Like, it's taking what your perception is now and say, okay, if that's true, then what? And finding the hidden demands behind it that can really help us.
Yeah. And so who do you think this is like best used for? Is it kind of for anybody, or is kind of pull it out?
Good question. I think it is good for anybody, because as you know, we're born and wired in a way to disturb ourselves. You know, like we are very good at thinking in ways that don't help us. And so we all have demands. We all have ways of thinking that hold us back from being our best selves. And so I think it's anybody that's feeling stuck, anybody that experiences emotions that get the best of them or have behaviors that they've been trying to change, but don't feel like they've moved on them, could benefit. It works with kids too. Like, you just have to make it more fun, less talk, more action, you know, experiential. So it really can help everybody. I will say, like, I do find that like I lean on CBT protocols, you know, for like OCD, you know, obsessive compulsive disorder and some other things because, you know, they're very effective and the research supports it. And so there are certain things that might not be my first jumping. Yeah.
So it sounds like, yeah, dependent sort of on maybe the severity or what that person is experiencing. But it's true, right? We all have these automatic thoughts. I think it's rare that we even interrogate it because sometimes it's like, oh, that's fact. And sometimes even just pausing to be like, what is that? What am I thinking? Got it. Right. Even that act alone of just being a little mindful really does help. So you are the first person we've interviewed that actually works with children and adolescents. So I would love to know, what do you think are the advantages like as a practitioner intervening early with youth?
I mean, they're immense. I think, I mean, if it's like with anything, right? Like if you catch an infection early, your odds are better, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you can intervene early, especially in the parent-child relationship or caregiver-child relationship, if that's possible and can really strengthen it, I mean, the outcomes are great, right? Because a secure attachment is behind, you know, a lot of positive outcomes for kids as adults. So I think it's not only good though for the family, it's not only good for the child, it's also good for the community too, which I really love. And that's a part of why I'm so passionate about working with kids and adolescents, because I actually didn't see myself working with this population when I was a teenager or even early college. So, but I've really come to love it because I see that like when you can help parents and kids feel good about themselves in the relationship and very connected to each other, it relieves people and individuals from suffering, but it leads to pro-social behaviors and adults that contribute in very positive, meaningful ways to the world. And so I just find like, if we could just help all families, all kids to really capture that, like the world would be a different place. So I know it's kind of my lofty, like love for it.
I think it's true. You know what I mean? Like the earlier, and especially like how many people have difficult parent-child relationships, you know? So, I mean, just to get that intervention, and it reminds me, one of the exercises I do often with people is imagining that their parents actually got support, like actually had someone intervene when they were young, and like the relief they feel just in that moment, just even imagining that their parents actually got help from an expert on how to like parent them is usually like relieving in itself. And it's just so universal. So
I love that. And I often, when I'm working with parents, well, I say like, you know, I know some of these skills might not come as second nature, you know, like it's just not automatic for you, but like, imagine if your parent did this with you every day. They praised you every day for this. Imagine how that would have changed you as an adult. And that's like a really kind of profound thought exercise for a lot of parents. And, you know, it often leads to them really embracing doing what doesn't come natural sometimes. Because, you know, there's no manual for parenting. Like, we can't parent one child, each child the same, for one. And two, we're not born knowing all the time, you know, what to do. We're just kind of like going through it, seeing what works, what doesn't, what fits, what doesn't. And especially as I work with a lot of kids that have difficult behaviors, and especially kids that they say have aggression or a lot of noncompliance or difficulty focusing, or they're very just hyper, you know, kids that just love to touch and see the world, they're a little harder to parent sometimes. And so we definitely don't have those manuals for that, right? What comes natural might not work.
So yeah. So what's your understanding of healing and how like healing works?
When it comes to healing, I think broadly, it involves, as I mentioned earlier, really finding the ways that you are holding yourself to expectations that are very rigid or higher than what would help you, and changing those and finding ways to both accept yourself if you don't hit your expectations, as well as adjust expectations when they're unrealistic, and move yourself to a place where you're feeling, you know, you can catch when you're slipping into these ways of thinking that keep you stuck. That's one piece of it. The other is also through the relationship, right? Having secure attachments, even if it's your parent, you know, with your friends, families, mentors, whoever, can really bolster our resilience and help us heal from any suffering or experiencing. So finding ways to deepen that bond.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah, that reminds me of just the like the LGBTQ community in general, like especially like, yeah, growing up queer or maybe even trans or non-binary, growing up thinking and getting messages all around saying mm-hmm. that there's something wrong with you. And so getting to a point, I think a lot of folks in the community end up doing that internal work of like, no, actually those are my superpowers. I love that about myself. And that's why like pride is so important to celebrate your difference. Right. And then what you said about the positive attachment, the secure attachment, mm-hmm. a lot of like, queer trans folks, they end up, especially if they've had family rejection, they end up recreating these like family bonds where a chosen family. Yeah. And so it's just really interesting when you said that of like how like a lot of folks who maybe have just gone through that kind of naturally, you know, instinctively, yeah. intuitively do that.
Mm-hmm. The road to self-acceptance, like unconditional, is not equal. It's much harder depending on your life circumstance and who you are. And so I think that's what I love about specifically REBT and CBT, but is that like, that's doesn't matter what the world's saying, you know, we can do it. It's just going to be a lot harder sometimes because especially if your parents are the ones saying, this is not how you should be, it becomes really ingrained in you. And so we have to ungrain, I guess, is that a word? What would be the opposite?
Un-ingrained.
I just made up a word.
Really? Yeah.
So, and then yes. And then through relationships, because once we do that, then we can deepen those relationships too. Mm. So it worked both ways, you know?
That's so cool. It's so cool for you to hear it from you because I think when I think of like CBT or REBT, there's something about it that feels like kind of stale or like medicalized. But the way that you're talking about it, I'm like, hell yeah. Like, I love that stuff, you know, just like the unconditional acceptance of yourself and the people mm-hmm. in your life. So that's definitely one of my biggest takeaways. To that point, what are some common criticisms of cognitive behavioral approach? And then what would you say to that?
Well, I think you like hit the nail on the head. I mean, that's one of the biggest ones is like, oh, it's very clinical or it's kind of superficial. Some people might say, I would just say, you know, like you can't judge a book by its cover. And of course, like any therapy can be done in a robotic, methodical fashion, right? It can be done in that way. And it actually can still be effective that way, believe it or not, because the tools are actually helpful, you know, in and of themselves, right? Like heart surgery is going to be effective regardless of, you know, if the doctor's a little bit rigid and not, you know, doesn't have good bedside manner, right? But there's extra benefit from having that extra bedside manner. So that's one thing is it's very deep work actually. And it's not just about advice or behavior change, mm-hmm. you know, it's emotional too. And I think that, you know, depending on the individual and what they like, sometimes you just have to adjust the approach and make it a little more experiential and like action packed. And other times it works better when it's done in a logical fashion. You just really kind of have to match, but I don't know. Do you guys have any other criticisms you've heard? Like, what are your criticisms?
There's almost this thing because it's so like prized by insurance and there's so many issues with insurance, you know, so there's almost that like desire to rebel against it because it's almost like if your parents have that like favorite, I don't know, like they like broccoli. So yeah. You're kind of like, now I hate broccoli. Just, you know, it's like the fact that insurance companies just go so crazy for it because it's evidence-based. It's almost like you want to, because it's just so frustrating that they don't take seriously other modalities and allow healing to occur in other ways that mm-hmm. almost it becomes that like evil stepchild of the insurance companies.
Yeah. So true. I haven't thought about that, the role of insurance and how it's just been so pushed down our throats plays in right. some of the resistance. Yeah, I can see that. Absolutely. I mean, because insurance is always, you know, well, are we allowed to talk about this? Like insurance is always, you know, like looking for the shortest term.
Like, hey, shut this down.
Yeah, Lucia's like, you're off my panel. They're, you know, looking for the shortest, quickest. And, you know, when something shows promise, more money goes into it. And where money goes into it, it becomes the thing. And so, you know, I think that it's not to say there's so much else that works too. It's just, there's been a lot of research and money and that's why insurance loves it. And it's short term and quick, but it certainly doesn't make it any less valuable. And I've worked with clients for a year plus, like it doesn't have to be 15, 20 weeks, you know?
I was just going to ask you like how long, because you talk about brief therapy and a lot of people don't know this, that like, you know, it's one of the first questions I usually get on a consult, like how long do people stay in therapy? And for me, it varies, right? You know, it can be years or it could be months, but what is typical for like REBT or like some of the...
I mean, like the basic response would be like 12 to 20 weeks is average for a course of cognitive behavioral therapy. It depends on a lot of factors. One is how well-trained the therapist is in using the model. You know, relief can come quick if there's a lot of sharpness to sticking with it. Where is the person at too? Are they ready for change? You know, are they still in ambivalence? You know, and so that can play a role in how long it takes as well. But generally I'm working, if I'm working with younger kids, like the 2 to 8 year old range with their parents, then it's 12 to 14 weeks. If I'm working with adolescents, depending on where they're at and other factors, comorbidities too, which are other psychological disorders that are present with whatever they're coming with, can complicate it. And sometimes that will be the high end, 20 to 25 weeks. And then other times I'm working with adults or even adolescents for, you know, sometimes 6 to 8 months. But on average, I'd say under 20.
It's nice to hear the range too, because I think we're, you know, colloquially we think about that person sitting on the couch and they have the same therapist for 20 years. So it's nice to hear like, you know, maybe that's not 100% accurate. It could look like a different thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think everybody though wants to feel better as fast as possible.
Right.
And so if it depends on the goals too, you know, the reason the person's coming, but I really try as best as I can. And my husband's always just like, can you stop talking about psychology or why are you only reading psychology stuff? You need to like, you know, I'm like, I just want to get better and, you know, like help people get better quicker, you know? So.
Yeah. I'm the exact same way. I'm like all the self-help books.
And now like with YouTube and podcasts, it's just amazing the information we can get and from such brilliant minds. And I mean, this as well, like this is going to help so many people. I just think it's so great what we can access even as therapists ourselves.
Totally.
Plenty.
So much out there, right? Cool. On that, it's been so nice talking to you. How can people find you? Social media handle, website?
Yeah, I don't have a social media handle. Maybe I should create one. Our website, we're the Cognitive Behavioral Institute of Southern California, and the website is www.cbtiofsocal.com. You're interested in our children therapy site, we have another one for that. And that's www.pcitinstituteofsocal.com as well. And there's links on both to each other. So that's the way to find me.
We'll put it in the show notes. So we'll make sure that people can find you. Well, this has been so nice reconnecting for this podcast. And yeah, we'll see everybody next episode.
All right. Thanks so much for having me. I always love chatting with you guys.
Yeah, same. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thanks again for joining us.
Check out our show notes to learn more about this episode and to find all the ways to follow us.
And remember, if you're curious, try it.